Cliffcentral. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com. Future CEOs on Cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs. We, if you missed it, we just had a fantastic conversation with Hubble, who have partnered with Uber. They're a small startup. They're barely a year old, and yet they are doing business with one of the largest, most innovative and exciting organizations in the world. It's remarkable.
Not that your entrepreneurial startup is going to be stress-free, but I think that's a great example of having all your ducks in a row and it actually working for you and seeing it up front in a short space of time.
But that's what they did do. They put all their ducks in a row beforehand. They knew exactly play for play how they were going to do it. Go check them out. You can go and look for their website online. But let's move into this conversation.
From a startup to a 35-year-old business.
It's a family business as well.
Correct.
Which is also adds another dynamic to it.
Yes.
I think our guest is going to have some really good insights.
You're going to have a lot to talk about, Robin.
Yeah, Robin, welcome to the studio. I understand this is your first time on air, but you're on the right show for the first time on air.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Robin, just quickly introduce who you are, the business as well, and just give us a sense of I guess, why we would want you to be in studio talking to our Future CEOs audience, please.
Okay, so I'm Robin Haller. I'm the CEO of a family company called Deli Spices. Deli Spices is a company that focuses on supplying food ingredients and meat-related product offerings to the industry in South Africa. It was a business that my father started 35 years ago, and my brothers and I had the privilege to take over almost 25 years ago, and really be part of an amazing growth story.
Yeah, so he's being very humble because they are the third largest spice supplier to meat processing industry in South Africa. Don't be shy.
Yeah.
Don't be shy.
If you want to brag.
Come on.
We're very proud of that achievement. I think, especially when you start from a company that's tiny, really. I mean, my father started a business.
Take us back.
I mean, 1981. My father was is a German immigrant. Immigrated to this country in 1965 with my mom in tow. I came to forge a career here in South Africa. I think the opportunities were here, and being someone that worked in the meat industry, our family in Germany are still very much involved in the meat industry.
Okay.
So there's a very strong sort of connection there, and he had a great deal of expertise that he could share here in South Africa, and was very instrumental in building very much of what the meat industry is today. So we're very proud of him. He's had an incredible career. He's still going strong.
Is he still hands on?
Very much so.
Yeah, Daddy.
When you have someone with so much knowledge that he can share on an ongoing basis, it's really valuable. And we tap on that on a regular basis.
I'm very interested in the dynamics that exist. We won't go there just yet. Let's talk about Deli Spices. So this is not – if someone thinks this is just a company that cans or bottles spice, I think that's that may be fundamental and core, but there's a bunch more to this organization than just that. I mean, we're talking R&D, whole bunch of other things. Can you just give us a sense of the scope, the size, what goes into a business like this, please?
So first of all, we're not a consumer-related business. So we don't have any products really that we sell directly to the consumer. We have a couple of brands that might be recognizable in the fresh meat counters, sort of our Camille Durang Boerewors, Vuyo's Wors, Bushcamp, all those kind of brands. We've got registered trademarks for those.
What is it?
And so we will supply.
I'm getting hungry.
No. We're in the food business.
I'm getting hungry, man. Yes, correct.
You have to go to gym a lot.
Sure. Yes, Robin.
So what we do is we create the solutions, the flavor solutions for the meat industry. We will supply that pack, for instance, a spice pack, to a butcher. He will then make up that boerewors and put it into the store, and hopefully we'll use our brand as well to sell the product. So that's sort of in a nutshell how it works. But in terms of the size, It's a company that employs in excess of 500 people. Mm. We're located in every major city in South Africa. We have an extensive network of distribution throughout the country. So every major city has a warehouse and a distribution network. We then operate in Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Kenya.
Lovely.
Yeah, so it's a Southern African business with great ambitions to further expanding our business way into Africa.
I'm interested to now understand when you and you said your brother came in.
Brothers.
Okay. Yes.
Three of us.
At what stage was the business there, and what difference did your involvement make on the business?
So the business was tiny. I think at the time when in fact I was the first one to arrive back. All three of us actually spent quite a considerable amount of time in Europe, in Germany.
Okay.
Studying or working and gaining some valuable
preparing
experience.
Yourself to come home and operate.
Yeah, I think that's definitely. I mean, none of us actually at the time thought that we would come back and join the family business. I think that's the first thing that we need to acknowledge about a family business. You can't assume that the next generation is automatically going to just want to be participating in the process.
Correct.
So it was just due to sort of crazy reasons as to why I came back so early, because I was still fairly young. And
sorry, can I ask how young were you?
I was 21 when I came.
21.
So
okay.
I left South Africa when I was 17, and came back when I was 21
okay.
years old.
Okay. Wow.
And
21 into a family business.
Into a family business. Okay. And so you know, we still had conscription in those days. We still had to go to the army. And being a German citizen, I had to do the conscription process in Germany as well. So I didn't want to do the army in both countries.
Yeah, dude, I mean.
And so I really wanted to come back to South Africa and said, well, look, if I have to do the army, then I might as well come and do it in South Africa. And that's what forced me to come back a little bit earlier. And then when we came back, it was dropped. So fortunately,
good timing.
I didn't need to do that, which was great. And then, yeah, it started to work for my dad. And it was quite interesting. In the early days, young student, quite frankly, not very ambitious, really. I just wanted a job and get on with it. Mm. All my mates were at varsity and having a good time, and really I just wanted a job. But it as it evolves, you suddenly realize, hang on a second, you're starting to identify a couple of opportunities here from what you've learned and picked up. And it just starts quite naturally by seeing where you feel that you can add some significant value in the business. And in my case, it was really around the brand. I think my father didn't really put much emphasis on the brand. And the second element of it was procurement. So we were sourcing a lot of our ingredients locally, and I just said, we really need to be looking to source our ingredients direct from where it's produced. Mm. And that's where the entrepreneurial flair starts coming through. Because you're faced with an idea, and now you have to implement, how are you going to add additional value to this business? How are you going to make a difference? And so I identified there was an opportunity that we could really, change things. And, so there was a start of a whole new adventure, of sourcing ingredients on a global scale, consolidating. And so the one thing led to the next thing. We were bringing in all these products, but we were bringing too many.
Okay. Yes.
So then I had to start another component of the business, which was trading in spices, which we never really did. We just really manufactured and made the blends. So we started to go out and find customers who would take a large chunk of the spices that we're importing, to turn the stock over and make sure that your cash flow is working. And I mean, I can tell you stories about how we almost sank the business because we overtraded. And
well, we want those.
Tell us about. We want to hear that.
Give us an instance here. So just paint a bit of a picture for us. Yeah. Because I think what happens, and especially with future CEOs, we're talking to sometimes senior executives, sometimes to startups. This whole range of different individuals that are different stages in their business development and the growth of their businesses, and they don't always hear these stories because they don't share them. Mm. Please share if you would.
No, as I said, we were trading and the business was really doing well. I mean, my father was very particular about the quality of products that we produced, and so we sourced really good quality products and really went out of our way. And I mean, I've been traveling to the East. The nice thing about my job is I've been able to travel the world extensively. Mm. And made some amazing friends and built some amazing relationships with suppliers all over the world, which is also a very key element that one needs to talk about. And so the business was booming. And I thought I was a bit of a superhero, to be honest. And started to take larger positions thinking this is a piece of cake. And every now and again, you know, the market sorts you out a little bit. and so you're suddenly sitting with a lot of stock. The market turns, the dollar prices start coming down. You're sitting with old stock, and then you just need one or two of your customers who hit a bit of a wobble. They can't pay you, and before you know it, you're wiping the sweat out of your eyes, and you suddenly realize you run out of cash. You know, and so I'm sitting in front of my dad, and he's like, so what are you going to do now, superstar? And then it's the next lesson in life, really. It's the old humble pie, you know, picking up the phone and phoning all your suppliers and your creditors and saying, guys, I need your help. You know, this is what happened. I was very honest. Mm. And it was incredible, you know, how because you've got well-established relationships with your suppliers, and that was one of the points I wanted to make. When you're in a little bit of a pickle, and I can tell you that it's probably a story that every successful business that's lasted a number of years will tell you, that you will go through a period like this. Mm. And if you've established good relationships with your suppliers, they will support you. And that's what I did. And I phoned them all up and I said, you know, can we do something? And then you stick to your plan. You know, if you say, look, I'm going to take 2 or 3 months to repair the debt, and then you do that. You don't extend that even further. Okay. And so we worked our way out of the situation, and there was a wonderful lesson learned.
That's a great piece of advice.
It is.
It's a great piece of advice.
Shall we talk a little bit about the family dynamics?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Mm. It's fascinating that
it's a great piece of advice. Yes.
It's not just a father and a son, it's a father and sons. So you've got a bit of a vertical challenge, perhaps, in terms of your relationship, depending on the relationship. But then you've also got this horizontal, potentially horizontal, even though you may be the CEO and someone else is something else, they still, you're a peer. Yeah. You're a brother. How have you been able to deal with all of that?
Well, to really make it interesting, I'm also the youngest brother.
Okay. And these are the days of our life. Love it at Daily Spices.
Okay, that makes it very interesting.
I always laugh and say I came home first, so I get the job.
First comes, first served.
Jokes aside, I'll be honest with you, I never really thought in my early years that was going to be something for me. Mm. As I said, when I came back from Germany, I was just like any other normal young student. I was more interested in frequenting the bars than any customers. But jokes aside, I think what happened was I really always thought that my oldest brother would naturally be the guy that would want to do that. So I never really gave it much thought. And my father was, you know, he's an incredible guy. I mean, he's, you know, led us into his business in an early stage and just said, guys, you know, if you've got value to add, you know, show what you got. I'm not going to hold you back.
That's very nice.
I'm not a dictatorial kind of father figure that says that as long as I'm hanging around, it's my rules. And, he, you know, on the contrary, he's always been amazing in the sense that he's been someone that can explain things very simply. And he always uses sport as a reference point. You know, in a business and especially in a family business, it's all about teamwork. Mm. And whoever's in a position to score the try or make a better move, that's the guy you pass the ball to. Yep. And so it's about sharing the responsibilities. And also it's about identifying those people that have a skill set, something that's a positive attribute maybe that you're not so strong in. So it's sharing, passing the ball to the guy with the strength. So, you know, he was battling with the dynamics of having the boys in the family business, and there was in essence at a time where there was a lack of leadership, and it's not because my dad would disagree with me. It was just that he battled to manage the process. Mm. And you know, there was a bit of bickering and infighting, and people were not sure as to what they were needed to do and where the focus was.
And can I jump in here? Which is often it's appropriate to have. So in a place of uncertainty, you're allowed to express concerns. You're allowed to fight a little bit, so you can just establish boundaries.
Sure.
and determine what goes and what doesn't. I think too many of us, we try and avoid that. Yeah. When actually it's part of the process.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, you also need to take a decision somewhere along the line.
Yep,
you have to
exactly.
be firm. And
yep.
and you know, if there's a lack of decision making, then you also end up in trouble. Mm. Because you don't make any. And that's sometimes yep. worse than making the wrong decision.
Constant state of flux, as they say.
Exactly.
Right?
So I mean I just really put my hand up one day and said, you know, I really think there's a lack of leadership here, and you know, someone should stand up, and I always thought my oldest brother would put his hand up.
Yeah.
And he did. He put his hand up and he said, no, I think Robin should do it.
Okay.
Sure.
And I wasn't prepared for that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it worked at the end of the day. You know? And so I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll give it a try. And at the age of 32, I took on the MD role of the business at the time. And yeah, and it was a learning curve. And it wasn't like I instantaneously started to transform everything and sort of rolled up.
There was no magic there.
You know, it's a phased approach. And and I think in many ways...
Which is the wise approach.
Yeah, you know, for me it was earning respect. You know, I think one of the big challenges you have in a family business is that, you know, people expect that the next generation is going to take over and they're more likely going to have the leadership role, et cetera, et cetera. And so when you do take on that mantle, then, you know, people say, okay, let's see what he's got, you know, and can he cut it? And for me, it was really about doing it in a more quiet and measured way and saying, listen, mm-hmm. let me go and prove what I can do.
Earning it,
and take it from that.
Correct.
The last thing that you can do is demand respect.
Yeah.
When you start demanding it based on the fact that you've got some kind of leadership role, well, I tell you what, no one respects you. Mm. It's a fact. So yeah, that's how it sort of it developed. And then I also had to learn about my strengths and weaknesses, you know, what I was good at and what I wasn't good at. And I mean, I can tell you, you know, I'm not a very good administrative kind of guy. You know, I'm poor at that. I mean, if my PA is my lifeblood.
Yeah.
I mean, she runs everything. And because I know what I can, you know, what I need to do. And so for me, it was building the business around people's strengths. Identifying those people in our organization that have certain strengths and making sure that they're complementing weaknesses of other people.
Mm.
And that's all it's been. It's about managing that process. And we've brought on some amazing people into our organization that have thrived in that kind of working environment, because, you know, everybody has strengths. There's no one that doesn't have strengths. And if you're able to operate in that environment where you can really push your strengths, you love it.
And yeah. bloom and flourish and just reach your full potential.
And the other most important thing is not to have the fear about your weaknesses. so many people work in organizations and hide their fears because someone's going to exploit it, someone's going to step on them and try and go up the ladder to success. So if you can create a culture where people don't have to fear their weaknesses, then it's great, you know. In fact, people come out and they say, hey, I'm not really good at that. Another guy says, well, I'll do it because that's something that I like to do.
Resilient entrepreneurs, you know what I mean? Just like going out there, yeah?
And I was watching something the other day, and this individual was describing how he's a number one. So he is the CEO, he is the founder, but he actually would prefer to be the number two or the number three or the number four. And I think just we live in a culture, we live in a world where number one is celebrated, number two and number three aren't often. And so, I mean, if we want success, we have to have a number two, number three, number four, number five, and then we must praise them, we must celebrate them, because they know that they're part of the equation, they're not something outside of that. Let's move the conversation a little bit to the JV that you guys have got, the partnership.
Yeah.
Just talk us through that. So I mean, this is no small thing. It's another family-run business, but a large entity. Talk us through it, please.
So, you know, you're always looking to diversify your business. You're always looking at opportunities. One of the things that you have to understand in a business, you have to keep growing. If you don't grow, you go backwards. So, you know, our industry that we operate in is highly competitive. We got lots of competition, and they're all pretty good. Huh? So you have to keep on looking for new markets and new opportunities. And so 10 years ago, we were approached by a company called Marn. It's a French flavor and fragrance company. They've been operating in South Africa for about 25 years. And they said, look, we're looking to partner with someone who could assist us with savory blends, and you guys are blenders, and we don't have that. We've been focusing predominantly on the sweet and fragrance elements of our business. So we're looking to expand. Would you consider working together with us? So we jumped on a plane. We flew over to France. We met the family, and we were blown away by the organization and the potential that exists.
What a great collaboration!
Yeah, and I mean, this is a family business, 145 years old.
Sure, wow.
We're into their fifth generation.
Unbelievable.
And it's, you know, it's a massive company, billion euros in revenue. It's the sixth largest flavor and fragrance company in the world, and it's still a family business.
Wow. Yeah.
So to be in a situation where two family businesses come together, they got the same value systems, and they really enjoy the adventure of growing a business, and especially in Africa. Mm. And they have an understanding for the African continent. They're well
African
represented.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of synergies. And so we started to work together, and we came to the realization that there's a lot more that we can do than just a JV. So it was a standalone entity. We had 50% each in this business, and it was focusing on a particular core market of savory blends. So we as a family also needed to decide where we wanted to go as a business. The company's grown phenomenally in the last couple of years, and we've grown into so many different sectors of the business. So we're not only in ingredients, but we're in meat processing equipment. We do natural casings and artificial casings that go with that. We do commodity trading. We're one of the biggest distributors of soya, functional soya in South Africa to the meat industry. So there's so many elements of our business, and not to mention the expansion to Africa. And so there's a big growth, and it's a business that's been funded solely by ourselves throughout the years. It's a sizable organization, and for us to be able to take it to the next level, we really need to, as a family, come together and say, you know, what do we want to do?
Yeah.
And how do we get it?
And it sometimes can be difficult. I think in organization, in different kinds of organizations, where you're not sharing this constant space or vision, you can sometimes re-energize that quite easily. In this particular instance, it's a little bit closer to home, so sometimes can be a little bit more of a challenge.
Sure. You know, we said, look, if we want to take this to a whole new level, we're going to go and have to go and find someone that's going to walk the path with us. And that in its own right was a massive decision for us as a family because, you know, one tends to be quite protective over what you've built.
An outsider.
And, you know, so it took a lot of discussions and a lot of debates amongst ourselves. But at the end of the day, we all felt that that growth was really what we wanted, and Africa is where we want to be. Mm. And so we turned to our existing partners. Because I must tell you, we've been approached by a lot of companies.
I'm sure.
We had American companies, European companies.
Sure.
We had listed companies in South Africa. We had fund managers, private equity, you name it, bashing our door now and saying, guys, can we do something? And you got to find the right partner. You got to have a synergy, and most importantly, the culture has to work. Mm. And our business is a culture business. You know, we pride ourselves in the kind of people that work for us and what we've created. And so the fit had to be absolutely perfect.
The creation of dynasties, huh?
Yeah.
From dynasty to legacy. What do you want to leave behind for your kids? What does your father want to see in your kids about Deli Spices? Because I'm sure that's inherited and that's something that can't be bought.
No, but I think I would adopt a very similar attitude. My father never put any pressure on us.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put any pressure on my kids. Yeah. And I know my brothers feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
They're 7 grandchildren and... You know, they must feel that they have all the opportunities in the world. Some of my nieces are very arty and love dance and things like that. And some of the boys are really focused into other areas of that are not related to our industry. It doesn't mean though that they don't have the opportunity to come in.
Mm.
But we really want our kids to go out and explore the world and go and do things and make sure that when they come back, like we did, we really want to come back.
Mm.
So that's the first thing. And really, we want to be able to create a space that they would be proud to be part of and feel like they have the opportunity to take it to the next level. And if they're not into it, then it doesn't matter. You know, we mustn't be so obsessed with this, you know, have to pass it on. And I mean, how many stories have you heard where
the kids hate it? The kids are hating it.
I know my dad wanted me to be a lawyer or a doctor,
and the kids are hating it. Life.
Yeah, as soon as I got the degree, they walked off and went and became a chef.
Correct. An actress.
Exactly.
Exactly what I did.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt.
But we could go on forever.
And we really could.
And he says he's never been on radio. Liar, pants on fire, Robin.
It's been a very, very good conversation. And thank you for your insights. We're going to have you back because
we have to.
We do two types of conversations here, really. Often it's about business, the business, growth of a business, but then also about a CEO. And you have a fascinating CEO story to tell. So we're going to have you back. Where we ask you just about that journey as a CEO. But thank you for your time today. Maybe we've got 30 seconds, and we ask this to all of our guests. Go back to that 21-year-old you who came back from Germany and just give him some advice, knowing what you know now.
My biggest advice is patience.
Mm.
Nice. You know, there's so many people out there that want to get to the top too quickly. And especially when you're building a business and in the early years, you've got to reinvest. There are far too many lifestyle companies out there.
Mm.
The business determines the lifestyle of the individual. Put that to bed. If you want to build a big business and a successful one, patience.
Patience, reinvest. Phoebe, how have you felt about the conversation today?
What a quality conversation.
Thank you so very much for your time. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. And all of you who are listening, we appreciate your time too. And we know that what we're sharing here is going to help you. So join us same time, same place next week. Phoebe, see you then.
Bye.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.